You're listening to Radio Influence.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head. This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey, it's me. It's the Babe Cast. You know that's what's going on. Jerry, why do I have this bullshit thing on my hair, on my ears, when I can't hear myself? You have to answer me on this. Oh, he thinks by not answering me that he'll use it, but I don't give a shit what he says. I don't know about you, but I sat in front of NFL TV for like three straight days. And I'll tell you one thing. I am never watching the red carpet. There's just no way I'm going to be watching that. This is getting ridiculous. Put the people out there. I want to see who they got. And it's a good thing because we loved it. So what are we going to do today? Well, we talked with Rick Saratella about it the whole time. He's the guy in the NFL draft Bible. We got to talk to it. We have to wrap everything up. Say who did well. If you're Chicago, you're out of your mind. You know, everybody said Green Bay did really well. I have to laugh at the Patriots because if you could see what they did, it's very funny. It's like they got like 12 draft choices and they're all better than yours, whoever they are. And I have to just tell you, I am like no secret where I live. When O.J. Howard was there, I was like ready to do backflips. Well, if you know me, I'm not doing any goddamn backflips. I think we all know that. But I thought it was really good. And O.J. Howard, and they did well with the Bucs, so I was pretty happy with all of that. I wanted to see how some of the other teams did, too. How New Orleans was going to do. I also wanted to see, what do you do if you're running Vegas and you're sitting there for 2 years and you're doing well, and as long as Carr's going to be all right, it's going to be all right, and then you're running off to Vegas. I don't know. So anyway, we'll talk a lot coming up with him about that. Actually, we'll do it. I'll tell you about my TV stuff coming up. Is that time for Rick? Rick, it's me, honey. It's me. Honey, have you slept at all? That's really the question.
Right after this show, we're going to.
I don't blame you. Right after the show, this is the time. I can imagine. It must be crazy. Let me just ask you something. If somebody wants to know how to get into the NFL Draft Bible, what do they have to do to get to that?
Well, now, the NFL Draft Bible now is free.
It's free.
So I went all free with it, yes. And then I think I have to send you, I have some stuff I have to send you, some Draft Bible stuff and the big board and all the measurables and stuff. And then what I'm doing now is in July, because we were membership, and now, long story short, I parted ways with my business partner. I made the website free. But what I'm going to do is a 2018 prospectus that's available in July. So it's going to be for the NFL Draft Bible for the upcoming year's draft class. And that's coming in July. So everybody who has the draft fever and wants to get a jump start on the early 2018 class, that's what we're going to be providing. And I'm actually, you know, that's what we're working on now. And as soon as I get that done, that'll be the first kind of PDF. Nobody buys books anymore, but that'll be the first kind of PDF I've done in a while.
Well, let's talk about everything that took place. It's very funny how we have the one draft, and then we have the second and third, and then we have it, and they've made it into this big thing. And I saw that they were doing a red carpet, which I was not watching anyway. I said, I'm not watching this at all. But let's talk about this, because Garrett goes, that's what we expect. What happened with Chicago? And, I mean, is Chicago as stupid as we think they are? And what about San Francisco? It feels like John Lynch got, like, 12,000 draft choices for that. What happened there?
Yeah, quite the haul for John Lynch's first draft, acquiring all those picks, moving back one spot, still getting their guy, and then trading back up into the first round and landing Reuben Foster from Alabama, who
right. –
If the Bears were to choose Solomon Thomas at two, they were ready to take Reuben Foster at number three overall. And John Lynch felt completely comfortable with that. Then they had the opportunity to add him in the back end of the first round. But he hoodwinked the Bears, thinking that the Browns were sold on trading back up. And they did have a deal with Tennessee at number five to trade that number 12 pick and a second round pick to move up to number five for Trubisky. But they had the Bears hit the panic mode and They gave up a king's ransom for a training wheels quarterback.
I like the training wheels quarterback for that. You know, of all the people out there, I thought, well, somebody's going to get it. But was their thing here? We're showing you that we're getting a quarterback. That's what they're doing. Because, you know, I got to be honest. I saw Mike Glennon here. He sucked here and he's going to suck up there too. And I thought, okay, then he's there. And they're like, okay, now you have Trubisky. But I don't know. I didn't think any of them were very good. And you and I have talked about this before. But they were just obsessed with it with the second pick.
Well, you know, if you want a quarterback, you're going to have to overpay. And I think somebody had mentioned they won a meaningless football game in December, and that meaningless win cost them about 5 draft picks.
Wow. And, you know, one of the things that I look at, do you have a certain time where you think everybody did well? I thought everybody did well, except some people say, well, maybe the Chicago wasn't very good and some of the other ones weren't. But do you see, you know, some really good drafts going in and some not so good drafts?
Well, in terms of not so good drafts, it's hard for us to sit here and you know, be the draft Bible Pope and say, hey, you did good. Hey, you're not so good, because we don't know what teams are looking for. They look for players that fit certain criteria, how they fit their scheme. Every team is different. So, you know, when I put together my board, it's really with blinders on in terms of scheme or fit. And we really don't know what teams are looking for. So that is to be determined. Now, I can sit here and tell you, hey, would I give up all those draft picks, all those lottery tickets to move up one spot and grab a quarterback? To me, that was the worst part of the draft. And, you know, you want to talk about reaches in the first round. I felt like T.J. Watt for Pittsburgh, I get it. The Steelers want a pass rusher. He's a situational pass rusher guy. But for me, first-round pick, I want an every-down player. I want an impact player. And to me, T.J. Watt was more of a situational guy. Now, you want to talk winners, babe. I got 3 big winners. I don't know how much time we have.
Oh, more than enough time to talk about all the winners. You better believe it, because you're going to sleep afterwards.
All right, so in the NFC, I take a look at what Green Bay did, and they didn't have a first-round pick, but they rebuilt their secondary. They added 2 guys back there, Kevin King and Josh Jones. Incredible length, speed. You take a look at what the Seahawks secondary is. The Packers now have something to combat that is very similar. Then they added Montrevious Adams up front out of Auburn, and just a space eater who dominated at the Senior Bowl. Then they converted the wide receiver Montgomery last year to running back. So they took Jamal Williams just as an insurance policy, between the tackles running back. You see, they cut their running back, Christine Michael, with that selection. And then my offensive sleeper of the draft, Malachi Dupree, wide receiver for Green Bay in the 7th round. That's my NFC winner.
So you think that they did it all? You think that they, I mean, does that have to do, we have the best draft in the whole wide world, or is it we're really good at this guy?
Well, you know, Ted Thompson is a guy that, you know, there's a few teams around the league that don't, you know, there's the Blesto and the National that all the NFL teams are a part of, except for very select few. And the Green Bay Packers, they do all their internal scouting. They don't overpay. They don't go and sign other players, free agents. They believe in identifying players who fit their scheme, and even undrafted free agents. They're going to develop those guys. They're going to groom those guys, and they're going to fit them into their system rather than overpay a guy like Mike Glennon. You know, they're going to develop guys through the system, and that's exactly what they did with their quarterback in Aaron Rodgers.
You know, if we're looking at that and we look at what happened with, well, I guess we have to look at the stupid, what happened with the Chicago Bears there? I mean, we go back to the same thing, but did they do anything great there? I mean, okay, you know, you got a 4th round pick here and you got a guy over here, but they were so busy trading people like crazy. I didn't know where to go here.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing, is they gave up all those picks for Trubisky, and then they come back with their 2nd round pick, a guy that we talked about, babe, right? Adam Shaheen, the 280-pound tight end. But to me, that's more of a, you know, again, a risk reward type of pick, that if you're a contender or you have extra picks to work with, Then you roll the dice on a guy like that. That's more of a luxury pick. And then Eddie Jackson, who I love, they got him in the fourth round, but he's coming off a season-ending injury. So again, another guy. The first three picks, you can argue, they're not going to start the first year. And then what's really interesting, babe, is in round four, they take Tariq Cohen out of North Carolina A&T at 5'6", 180 pounds, and that's okay, but do you know Donnell Pumphrey from San Diego State is the all-time leading rusher in NCAA history? He broke Ron Dane's record. And Donnell Pumphrey is about the same size, a better runner, and was still on the board. And they went Tariq Cohen over Donnell Pumphrey. So it was a head-scratcher. But not to hop and bop too far off the course, I got two winners in the AFC, and I'll tell you why.
Tell me.
Cincinnati, okay, they were in the playoffs 2 years ago, not last year, but then they added the fastest man in the draft in John Ross.
Right.
And we saw, you know, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu left the last few years in free agency. It really affected it. It impacted their passing game. Now you have Ross to stretch the field to pair him with A.J. Green. You add Joe Mixon, who, hey, the Bengals will pull the trigger on anybody, right? Ross had the injury concerns, but, hey, it brings speed. Right. Mixon has the off-the-field stuff, but, hey, he could be the best running back in this draft. Then they add two pass rushers in Carl Lawson, one of the most underrated players in this year's draft, and the pass rusher Willis from Kansas State, who's just an athletic freak. Then they take one of my favorite sleepers in this year's draft, Josh Malone out of Tennessee, a wide receiver that people have valued higher than Robert Meacham, who was a first-round pick coming out of Tennessee. And then they add Glasgow, Michigan, in the late rounds. To me, Cincinnati is the AFC team that helped themselves the most to get back to the playoffs. And Carolina, they added McCaffrey and Samuel. I think that's going to help them get back in the NFC. And then one more, babe, and I'll let you react to it. But Jacksonville with Tom Coughlin, they pulled no punches, and they just renewed the option for Blake Bortles, $19 million for 2018, which is a whole other story. But because they have Blake Bortles as their quarterback, they did the smart thing, which I don't believe in selecting first-round running backs, but when Blake Bortles is your quarterback, you take a guy like Leonard Fournette, you alleviate some of that pressure off of Blake Bortles, and then you add a guy like Cam Robinson, who is going to come in and compete for a starting job. Dwayne Smoot from Illinois is a pass rusher that's going to come in and compete. DeeDee Westbrook, the wide receiver, is a Heisman finalist, mid-round pick. And then my defensive steal of the draft, Blair Brown out of Ohio. I mean, this guy just plays with his hair on fire, a little bit undersized, so he goes day three. And they added speed. He's a 4.5 speed guy at linebacker. Then they added Jalen Mayrick at cornerback, a 4.28 guy. And then, you know, Coughlin loves the fullback. So what does he do in the seventh round? His final pick, and Giants fans know, Coughlin loves his fullbacks. He drafts Marquez Williams out of Miami, babe. 270-pound fullback to line up back there with Leonard Fournette.
Don't you love it? I mean, you hope it all works well, but it is kind of great when you look at it in that way. He loves those fullbacks, as you said. You know, I mean, they look better, but we thought they were going to get another quarterback. And, you know, I've told you before, I didn't know until he showed up in the last year and he was at USF and they were talking Blake Bortles. And I was like, who the hell is that? And he was right down the street. And then they made him like this big to-do with the third pick or whatever it was. And I was like, okay, but he hasn't shown me anything. But you're right. He's got two big guys, especially with, I mean, you got to watch him all the time. So maybe they'll get better this year now, do you think? Or Bortles is the issue?
Well, you know, if you look at the common denominator of playoff teams, non-playoff teams, they all have the same thing in common. They have no quarterback. And until they fix that problem, hey, it's going to be an issue. But, you know, next year is the year of the quarterback. We did the 2018 mock draft on NFL Draft Bible. We've got four or five quarterbacks in the first round. So you know what? The pieces are in place. Maybe it's not their year this year, but what they did in the draft last year and then again this year, they have such a good young core of nucleus players there that if they could ever get that quarterback problem solved, I mean, they're ready to compete. So, you know, I think the AFC winner in terms of competing right away is Cincinnati, but long-term projection, if you give this team some time to develop, I mean, they added a good blend of players there in Jacksonville.
You know, one of the things that I look at is I was looking at the Broncos, and I thought, I understand the last guy was Chad Kelly, the Jim Kelly's nephew, but they did some things there that I thought, well, it seemed to be all right. I mean, they were putting Bowles, who I thought he was going to cry his eyes out before he went up there and he had his little kid and all that stuff, but he was like, his head was on the table and he was crying, and then when he said to John Elway, "I love you," that was the best thing I ever heard, because it sounds like me. I always go, "I love you." But I thought, did they turn out to be all right? Because they, you know, like they, it was kind of wild the way it all happened. But they're sitting there with like a third quarterback to go with Seaman and Paxton Lynch right now. What do they do?
Yeah, you know, ever since John Elway has arrived in Denver, he's always given himself options. And you remember Tim Tebow with that miraculous playoff win over Pittsburgh. He didn't care. He went out and got Peyton Manning. And then even though they had Peyton Manning, he was looking ahead and they drafted Brock Osweiler. And then, you know, when Brock Osweiler was getting ready to hit free agency, they went out and assured themselves with a guy like Trevor Siemian. And even so, they took Paxton Lynch, but he's subscribing to that Bill Walsh philosophy: take a quarterback every year, and hey, if you have more than one good one, then you have some commodity to trade. But it's funny because Chad Kelly, Mr. Irrelevant, now they're going to fly him out to Southern California for a week of events where, you know, I'm not so sure they want this guy attending all the nightlife parties in California with his off the field track record. So that was a little bit ironic, being Mr. Irrelevant. But you know, the more I talk to Garrett Bowles, babe, the more I fall in love with this guy myself. This guy is so fiery. I got him all riled up because I asked him about, you know, teams questioning whether or not he was a wild card, and he had a little bit of issues off the field growing up. He was an adopted kid, always getting into trouble, and he just went on a rant and a rave. And he said credit to John Elway, because that was one of the final visits. It was his final visit during the draft process. And when he left the Broncos facility, the last person he spoke to was John Elway. And John told him, "Hey, I'll see you on Thursday." And he said, John Elway is a man of his word. And I think he's going to come in and compete for the starting job there. And DeMarcus Walker, who they grabbed in the second round out of Florida State, I thought this guy, flying under the radar, if he came out last year, he was really in contention for a first-round pick. He came back for a senior year, became a little bit more polished, and somehow, some way, his draft stock somehow plummeted into the number 51 overall. And then Carlos Henderson from Louisiana Tech, this is a boom-or-bust type of selection. I like it. He's a junior underclassman. All he's done at Louisiana Tech is make plays. He's a burner. He can go up and high-point it. He makes all kinds of acrobatic catches. And then you take another dip into the small schools. Lamar, Brandon Langley, a big long corner, 6 foot, 4.4 speed. You get a guy like Jake Butt in the fifth round. I mean, this guy was a borderline first round talent, and you saw him collect, I think, $500,000 from that insurance policy he took out. And then, you know, McKenzie and Henderson, he took a wide receiver out of Georgia, a running back out of Coastal Carolina, scat back and a kick returner that brings some speed to the table. So I think that, you know, Elway identified what the team needs. They needed some beef up front on the offensive and defensive line. Those were the priorities. And then he got himself a playmaking wide receiver, a developmental corner, and who knows, a starting tight end a year or two down the road.
You know, one of the things is we were looking at Denver, and then I'm thinking to myself, what about Dallas? Because everybody wants to know everything about Dallas, but they are always seemingly very happy with whatever they do. But they're, you know, I always like it when they go, no, this is the guy we were looking for, even though he might have been ninth on the list and you accidentally put the wrong guy up there. But whatever it is, they seem to be happy with whatever they're doing there.
Yeah, they're always high-fiving over there in the boy room in Dallas. But, you know, they wanted a pass rusher. They added Taco Charlton, who, you know, probably not a double-digit type of sack guy, but a guy who can make an impact there and Randy Gregory now having some more issues that Taco Charlton is going to fill a need. Tadobi Awuzie, the poor guy, I mean, I think his moment got a little bit overshadowed by the Drew Pearson announcement, which a lot of people thought was the climax of the draft, with Drew Pearson coming out and, you know, giving it to the Eagles fans, giving it right back to him. I thought that was very enjoyable, but I think the Awuzie fits the hole created by Morris Claiborne leaving. He's, you know, Morris Claiborne signed with the Jets during free agency, so they went and added Awuzie, who could play inside, he could play outside. Very physical guy. He even played a little bit of linebacker at Colorado. And then Jordan Lewis is a prototypical slot cover guy from Michigan. Some people think he's the best cover corner in the entire draft, but he had an off-the-field issue that caused him to slide to the third round. Ryan Switzer, they added on punt returns. And then, you know, day three got a little foggy for me. I didn't love what they did there with their final four or five selections. The one guy I think that offers a lot of upside playing opposite of Dez Bryant, there's Noah Brown, a redshirt sophomore out of Ohio State who really showed some flashes there for the Buckeyes. And this guy's a young talent. He might not develop for a year or two, but he can make some plays there.
You know, you and I talked about Awuzie before to see who would go after him, and Dallas went after him. How do you feel about it? You think he could be a bust or maybe not so?
No, I mean, you know, in the second round there, I think that's about the value for him. And you talk about, I think, 58 defensive backs. We talked about the secondary depth. It's just a credit to the NFL. And, you know, even with the Awuzie, they backed it up with the Michigan corner, because you could just never have enough cornerbacks in the NFL. They just spread you out so much. I mean, three set wide receiver formations are becoming the norm.
You know, I've been through, let me go through everything I go through. Look, first of all, they had this wonderful thing that I think the Patriots took a couple of people, but somebody put down, like, really the people that they had traded for this year. And you have to laugh at Brandon Cooks being their number one and all that, but they sort of put it out for everybody. And of course, I love the Patriots, so why not? It looked great. It looked like they just got the best draft in the world, because that's what they do. Even though they only had a couple of players in the draft, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, they went for the quality over quantity. And, you know, Derek Rivers out of Youngstown State, a very underrated pass rusher playing for Bo Pelini there, a small school program, and really had an outstanding year rushing the passer. So, you know, the Patriots play this hybrid type of defense. He's going to fit that role at his size, 6'4", 250 pounds. He played with his hand in the dirt in college, but he could play 34 outside linebacker. And then Antonio Garcia, not a great year for offensive linemen. We only saw two of them go in the first round, but Antonio Garcia out of Troy is one of these developmental offensive tackle prospects that a lot of people liked. Me, not so much. I didn't really like what I saw at the Senior Bowl. I was kind of waiting for him to show me something, and it never came. But third round pick, you hope that you can develop him in a year or two down the road and see what happens. And then Dietrich Weiss from Arkansas, Here's a guy, you know, he could play 34 defensive end or 43, you know, defensive end too. So again, fitting that hybrid type of role. And Connor McDermott out of UCLA, he's just a big boy, 6'8", 310 pounds, probably a right tackle, where Garcia could maybe project as a left tackle. He has the potential and athleticism to do that. Connor McDermott out of UCLA, probably more of a prototypical right tackle.
You know, when I'm dancing around, I'm thinking about it. What about the fact that you and I both said we agree with the fact that we're really concerned about Teddy Bridgewater and whether or not he's coming back, and there wasn't anything that they went for, or they were just waiting for next year because it's a better quarterback situation for next year? But that really sort of sets them back. I understand Dalvin Cook was there, and good for them, but I still wonder whether or not Teddy Bridgewater is really going to be the quarterback this year.
Yeah, you know, I think Bridgewater is there, and if he comes back, great. If not, they're ready to move on with Sam Bradford for another season at least to get him by. And, you know, I'm not sure he's the long-term answer either, but again, you look at what Mike Glennon is going for on the market, and maybe Sam Bradford is looking good to them. I don't know. But, you know, Dalvin Cook finds himself in a great situation because, hey, this is exactly what Minnesota needed, a three-down running back, can do it all, run, pass, catch, block. So, you know, Mike Zimmer's going to love his blocking ability, and a lot of rookie running backs don't have that. Coming out of college, Jimbo Fisher really worked on that with Dalvin Cook, and then Pat Elfline out of Ohio State. Some people like him as a guard. Others like him as a center. Definitely capable of coming in and competing for a starting job. So with a third-round pick, I think that's value. Jaleel Johnson in the fourth round, interesting guy, kind of undersized. So I think that's why he slid to day three. But a definite rotational depth there on the interior defensive line. And then you take a look at some of their other day three picks. They added Bucky Hodges, you know, whether you want to call him a wide receiver or a tight end. This guy's a mismatch problem, especially in the red zone. I mean, a big 6'7" wide receiver. You saw him make a lot of touchdown grabs there at Virginia Tech. You know, Laquon Treadwell didn't really have a great season, their first-round wide receiver from last year. So who knows? Maybe you have Bucky Hodges now lining up opposite of Laquon Treadwell, who's 6'4" in his own right. You got two tall tree trunks now for Bradford to hit in the end zone, and they added Stacy Coley from Miami. Those guys out of the U, they're always speed burners. But watch out for Rodney Adams. Rodney Adams out of South Florida, their fifth round pick. This is a guy who can make an impact in several ways, whether it be as a receiver, return man, you want to do some end arounds. Rodney Adams is a guy that we really like here at the NFL Draft Bible.
Well, you know, and I had heard a lot about him, and he's really that guy. Just give him the football and worry about it later. I have to go here. I was going to ask you about the Jets, but I have to talk to you about the Bucs. I have to tell you something. When O.J. Howard was there, it was like I was in teen heaven when they had the opportunity to take him. I was like, I never thought he'd be there, and just, they sort of looked like it was going to be Dalvin Cook. And people were saying, take Cook, and I'm like, no, you got to take O.J. Howard because, again, they had Safarian Jenkins, who was horrible. And, you know, that turned out to be awful. And then they've got this guy who's a big Alabama guy. Put him right here and let him stand over there and catch the ball because they really needed another tight end there.
Oh, boy. And, you know, what's lost in the mix is Cameron Brate had a great season last year for the Buccaneers. So you talk about two tight ends now that not can only catch but also block. And, hey, taking a little bit of a page out of the Patriots playbook here, two great tight ends that you can line up now. You can go two tight end formations. You can line up DeSean Jackson in the slot. You have another guy in Mike Evans who's emerging as a premier wideout, Vincent Jackson. I don't know what his status is going to be, but you talk about the, you know, everybody talked about the defensive ammunition in this year's draft, but you take a look at teams like Tampa Bay, Carolina, the New York Giants, three, and the Saints, four teams in the NFC that just loaded up on offense early. And O.J. Howard, I mean, this is going to be Jameis Winston's best friend. Are you kidding me? This is exactly what he needs, a security blanket underneath who can work the seam, let Mike Evans work the outside, let DeSean Jackson stretch the field. And, you know, now they've set up Jameis Winston in a scenario where, you know, there's no reason why he should not succeed. And, you know, even the late round pick Jeremy McNichols out of Boise State, he could be an eventual replacement for Doug Martin down the road, but he's going to be a great change of pace back. And you take a look at the first four picks for Tampa Bay. All four of these guys should come in and compete for a starting job. And, you know, they got great depth at wide receiver, so maybe Chris Godwin doesn't start, but we talked about him too. He's a true outside wide receiver. This guy lined up outside every play for Penn State, and he's going to be, you know, a quality backup to start off. But I wouldn't be surprised. Hey, he could start, you know, if Vincent Jackson doesn't come back, then Chris Godwin could start down the road. But Justin Evans, the safety out of Texas A&M, was a guy that, you know, some people thought he was a first-round talent. So to get him at number 50 and then Kendall Beckwith at inside linebacker, I think he's another guy, 107 overall, is going to come in and compete for a starting job. And, hey, that's all you could ask for. Even Stevie T, we spoke to Stevie T, Tuaco Lovato, I know I butchered his name, and he'll forgive me, babe, for that. But this guy's backstory is incredible. He was homeless at some point in his life where he was just living out of a car with his mom. and you know, where he's come from and to where he's now headed. Just sneaking in there, you know, 253 picks. He just snuck in there in the seventh round, but he is very, very fortunate and blessed to be in the situation. And a 330-pound guy that just, you know, eats double teams.
Well, I mean, that was one of the things, because we know, I know that he came from USC, and I didn't know about him living homeless and all that, but it seems to me if you get this opportunity, you're going to do everything to make it pretty great. And I think that, you know, this isn't 14 or 16 teams that we take anymore. I mean, in the draft, we're now down to seven. So I think your seven sort of has to stay for at least a year. So it looks like you did a good job anyway.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think if you get drafted, you gotta feel good about the player and try to work with him. And, you know, he'll be a rotational kind of guy and fill the gaps and be a run-stuffing machine. And that's, you know, for a seventh-round pick, 330-pounders don't grow on trees, babe, that can move around. So, hey, why not, right?
We like the 330 pounds on that. Let's talk a little more. Let's talk about the Jets and what they were going to do or didn't do, or they've just decided – you know, what are they going to do this? They were, you know, every day they every year they look for another quarterback, but this year they may not have. And is that a good thing for them anyway? Or are they just going to be sorry they didn't get another quarterback?
Hey, well, you know, if you don't believe in a quarterback, then I agree with the philosophy, not panicking like Chicago to go get one just to get one. Mm-hmm. And hey, they stood pat, and all of a sudden Jamal Adams fell into their lap. I mean, some people had this guy as the second best player in the draft, and here he is at number six, very similar to Leonard Williams a couple years ago. They didn't really want Leonard Williams, but he just happened to fall to them. And hey, if I was the Jets, I wouldn't have a game plan heading into the draft anyway, because I need help at every position.
Yeah. Right.
You know? I mean, so a lot of people said, hey, they went and took a safety with the first two picks, but we have Calvin Pryor, who we just took in the first round. Well, that was the last regime, and Calvin Pryor has been a disaster. So, you know, with Maurice Claiborne, who we mentioned earlier in the podcast,
yeah,
Jamal Adams, Marcus May, they just added three brand new starters in the secondary. So that went from a weakness now to a strong point. And hey, they have nobody to throw the ball to. They let go Brandon Marshall. Quincy Enunwa and Robbie Anderson are their leading returning receivers. So they added a Darius Stewart, a big play maker from Alabama. Chad Hansen, I actually like the fourth round pick more than the third round pick here. I think Chad Hansen from California will wind up being the better player there. But then Jordan Leggett, a tight end, another pass catching tight end in this draft class, and Elijah McGuire from Louisiana Lafayette. So they went offensive ammunition here. And then the one guy to keep an eye on, this guy, if you haven't watched the film on Dylan Donahue, go Google this guy and watch his YouTube highlights from West Georgia. All he does is just make plays all over the field. Obviously, smaller school, smaller level, lower level of competition, babe. But he did exactly what he's supposed to do, which is just dominate and look like a man amongst boys playing at a different speed out there. So it's going to be interesting. I think he had 26 sacks or something crazy this past season. So it'll be interesting to see how his game translates to the next level, especially because the Jets are lacking a pass rusher, and that's something they haven't had. Even going back to the whole Rex Ryan era, they didn't have a single pass rusher that whole time. Todd Bowles still searching for one also.
You know, one of the things, I mean, you're in New York, right? Do you kind of go for the Jets or the Giants, even though this is what you do for, but is there one that you grew up with?
Yeah, you know, growing up in Jersey, believe it or not, babe, I was a big Elway guy. I grew up a Broncos fan back in the early, mid-80s. And then as I got involved in the business, and now this was my 16th year covering the NFL draft, you know, I always rooted for New Jersey football, being from New Jersey. And it was funny, Kevin King from the Packers, he went on a trip to the Jets. He had no idea that the Giants and Jets played in New Jersey. I thought that was kind of funny, but, anytime here in New York that, and I'm a Yankees fan, but I root for the Mets too, because they've never been a threat to the Yankees. And anytime a team in New York is in contention, it's always more exciting. So if the Giants or Jets are in the playoffs, it's going to be a more exciting time. When they don't make the playoffs, it's kind of like, you know. So I root for Jersey football, Giants, Jets. Let the world know they play in New Jersey, babe.
Well, they have to. What do you find out about the – I mean, they went on and got – what's his name from Seattle. But what do you find about what's going on with the Raiders right now? They – Oakland Raiders, love, love, love. But it really is going there. And there's an NHL team. And a friend of mine actually over the weekend said to me, do you think that Tampa would go to Vegas? And I said, well, maybe it would be – I'm talking about baseball. And he said, do you think they go to Vegas? And I thought to myself, well, no, they go to Montreal or Charlotte. And then I thought, well, maybe he's really right that they'll put three teams in Vegas right now. You know, but at least they have two right now. But if you've got to play in Oakland for the next 2 years, what are you going to do? I guess people are just going to go, but I don't think it'll be as busy as it was.
It's an interesting situation because, I mean, these guys are really ready to make a run. You know, with the poorer players they have. You saw last year before Carr got injured, they were the one team that really kind of matched up well with the Patriots and could have gave them some issues if David Carr didn't get injured. Now, you take a look at what Reggie McKenzie did. He snuck Gary and Conley in here in the first round, and then he signed Marshawn Lynch to kind of take some of that detraction away. So everybody was talking about Marshawn's return to Oakland, and meanwhile they got the Gary and Conley pick in there, and Obi Melifonwu, who we talked about. I love that selection. I think he's going to really thrive and do well in Oakland there. And they added a first round pick called Joseph last year in the secondary. So now you take a look around the league, this secondary is really, really starting to take form there in Oakland. And then Andy Vanderdoss from UCLA in the third round, a guy that, you know, if not for the ACL injury a couple years ago, this guy, people had him pegged for the first round. So, again, Oakland, the first three picks here, these are guys that are going to be expected to come in, contribute. And then they take a guy, Elijah Hood, in the seventh round, a name worth keeping in the memory bank there, especially for all your fantasy football players out there. Elijah Hood from North Carolina, early on in his career, he was looking like a young Emmitt Smith, the way he ran, very similar size and speed. I think, you know, he got labeled as an underachiever, didn't really do so well for the Tar Heels the past season, but Elijah Hood could really wind up becoming a steal of the draft. And then I'll give you one more that they plucked, Jalen Ware from Alabama State. You know, this guy, he's from Mobile, Alabama. The Senior Bowl, you know, bypassed him. We had him down at the College Gridiron Showcase. This guy has over an 80-inch wingspan. He's just, you know, he's like George Foreman with the jab. He's just jabbing guys, you know. He's just like, get away from me. But Jalen Ware, I really like that pick in the seventh round, a developmental offensive tackle who can eventually start.
Was this a good draft or not a good draft?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I think I see great players, but, you know, I see great players, Dave, rounds 1 through 7. The eighth round was my favorite draft, the undrafted free agents, you know. I think I love the stories that come out of the undrafted free agents, and you can see guys that go undrafted and are going to go on and be successful at the next level. And, you know, every draft is deep, in my opinion. You got thousands of players coming out eligible for the draft. So if you do your due diligence and you do your homework, and teams like the Patriots and the Packers and some of these other guys like the Ravens, they do their independent scouting, because, you know, if you can learn to scout, you'll always remain on top of the NFL food chain. And you see that around the league: Steelers, Ravens, Packers, Patriots, Giants. And these are all teams that draft very well. Hey, look, the Giants, they just brought in Jaron Jones from Notre Dame, who I have the highest rated player not drafted. I had a fourth round grade on him. Some people like him as an offensive tackle. And another guy that was just injured, and now, you know, he goes undrafted due to injuries, probably come in and wind up starting for the Giants somewhere, whether it's at defensive tackle next to Snacks Harrison or maybe at offensive tackle. But, I mean, that's a perfect example. A KD Cannon out of Baylor, who's just, you know, blazing speed. Alec Torgerson out of Penn, who didn't go drafted. He went to Atlanta. You know, I expect that guy to do big things. He stuck behind Matt Ryan, but, You know, mm-hmm. Devonta Fields from Louisville. I mean, this guy was a burst onto the scene as a freshman at TCU, had some off the field issues, bounced around, went to Trinity Valley Community College for a year, winded up at Louisville, goes undrafted because of all the baggage. I mean, that's a guy that, you know, could possibly start, and he goes undrafted. So, you know, every year the draft is just full of fascinating stories, and I love it. I know you love it too, babe.
I know. I'm too crazy for it. I know that. I'll let you go, but let me ask you about DeShone Kizer. I mean, he goes to the Browns, and everybody will say, let him start, let him start. Is he really in the mood to start right now in the NFL?
No, and, you know, that's the whole spin, rinse, recycle. You know, the Browns, how many quarterbacks are they going to go to? I think this is now their fourth quarterback they selected in the first round now in the last decade. They had Brady Quinn and Brandon Whedon and Johnny Manziel. And, you know, Kizer, not the first round pick, but, you know, second round, still expectations there. No other quarterback on the roster unless you count Brock Osweiler. But I'm not expecting Osweiler to be there when the season starts. And hey, at some point, Kizer's probably going to get thrown into the mix here. Is he ready? No. Does he have anybody to learn from? You know, I know Hugh Jackson is supposed to be a great quarterback guru, but, you know, what about in the quarterback meeting? I mean, Hugh Jackson can't be there in the quarterback meetings room. Or, you know, who's he really learning from there? Cody Kessler's not teaching him anything. It's an interesting situation, but, you know, they do need a quarterback, so I guess you got to take one. You're not financially obligated as much with the second round pick, but, you know, again, none of these quarterbacks really moving and shaking, making me move or shake it either way, babe. But you know, that's the way the NFL is gone. I mean, there's a handful of great quarterbacks. There's a handful of above average quarterbacks, and the other half of the league are just mediocre.
Well, now you get to sleep. We both get to sleep after this. I was just jammed to the TV for so long. I know that. Listen, you are always so great to me. Rick, I appreciate it immensely. And I do appreciate that you're on the show with me. I do appreciate it.
Oh, babe, you know, it's always my pleasure. This is my favorite show to come on. And I can't tell you all the positive feedback I've gotten on other people's shows. They mentioned the show. I heard you on the sports, babe. I can't tell you how many times I heard that down in Philadelphia this past week, so I appreciate it. And it was only appropriate because we gave them such a great preview. It was only appropriate that we come back and hit them with the review. And, hey, in July, if you got nothing going on in the summer when we drop the 2018 NFL Draft Bible Prospectus, if you still got the draft fever and want to talk some draft in the summer, I'd be happy to come back on.
I always want to talk draft. So when we do it coming up in July, we'll do it. Rick, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, babe. We'll chat soon.
We love him. Rick Saratelli, he's got to get some sleep now, but he knows everything. The NFL Draft Bible, go find out about it. You'll get all the information that you need. You know what? I was thinking, am I watching? I don't want to say anything. I had so much TV on Tuesdays. It's a miracle. But I'm not going to tell you that much, but I do love Forged with Fire. I hope you like it because I think it's crazy. You know what? I watched that RV thing because I got nothing to do. So these people were on blah, blah, blah. And then my next door neighbor finds out that the guy is somebody that she works with and none of that stuff was real that was on TV. And they gave him a script and all that. And I said, I'm so disappointed. Like I never worked in TV. How long did I work in TV? But I can't even remember all of this. I don't need to do the 100 people that were removed from ESPN. It's a tough thing. It's a tough thing. That's all I can tell you. You know, either you do a million things or you don't do anything for something like that. You know what I was going to tell you about? You know, I got to be honest with you. I have not smoked pot in clearly 30 years at least. I just one day thought, I just don't want to do it anymore. And I don't know what happened. I just didn't do it. And I gave away whatever I had because believe me, I always had a lot. Or I always had some. Let's use that. And so one day, at you know, I'm at Pasta Grill and I'm sitting on the porch with these guys who have a house that's right on the beach. And they're about three people and they're smoking pot and they're wanting. I said, no, thanks. You know, I just, it wasn't anything that I was interested in at all. I just didn't want it anymore. This was about 30 years ago. And I went home. Well, I got to tell you, first of all, I thought the helicopters were landing on the top of my roof. I had to close all the windows in the house. I knew for sure. At one point, I was going to lay on the ground because I was sure they were coming to get me. I don't know who they are. Sure, I have no idea who the hell that was. But I have to tell you, I hadn't been around it in a number of years, and they just happened to be smoking there, and I was just there. And we were even outside. It wasn't like inside, but I'll never forget it. And I went home, I took my bike, and I went home, and then I started hearing the cops, and I started like, oh, they're landing on my roof. Oh, I was closing the blinds, and I thought, well, Nance, I don't think you should be doing this anymore. You know, because everybody does it now, and I don't. And I was one who, like, I think I was 15 when I got into that because I lived on the other side of the world and it was very popular then before it came around here. But anyway, I was just thinking about it, you know, and sometimes I look out and sometimes I go, oh, do, you know, I wonder the people next. And I think to myself, I couldn't do that anymore. Jerry, do you have any pot? No, all right. Well, I was just trying just in case. I don't know what I'd do. If I did, I'd lay down on the floor and I'd close all the blinds. I don't know what happened to me. There's got to be better things on the radio than me. I am the fabulous sports babe.
If you know the babe at all, you'll know the show never ends. Follow her on Twitter at Real Sports Babe and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
This is an Ian Beckles Flava in Your Ear Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I'm going to say this. If I was in a Buccaneer organization, I would 100% wanted this because it's millions and millions of dollars of branding, okay, and marketing, and that the Buccaneer logo is going to be everywhere. We know, because we live here in the Tampa Bay area, we know, and you could correct me if you want, that Jameis Winston's a rock star. Do we know that?
Oh, he's a total rock star.
He's a rock star.
Rock star.
And I'm telling you,
I've
not said that about any other Buccaneer player, ever.
He can't help it.
Nope.
You know, and it's all natural.
He's a rock
star. And he's
star.
Just that guy.
Now, Jameis Winston, who almost gave me wood when I heard him speak in his first college game. His first college game, I just was watching him by accident. And he was in a locker room and he had a speech. And I text my boy, I go, dude, who is this dude? Oh, this kid, Jameis Winston, he's supposed to be real good. And I was like, this kid's different. And I didn't even watch him play. And at that point, when I watched him play, I'm like, ooh, this kid, he's grimy. You know what I mean? There's something about him. And he's a rock star. And if everybody gets exposed to him, how much is that going to do to him, you think? He's going to make millions of dollars from the exposure he gets from Hard Knocks because people in Detroit and people in Seattle never really have been exposed to Jameis Winston.
He's going
to
pick up a ton more new fans.
About endorsements? His endorsements are going to go through the roof. Watch.
You would think.
Watch.
You would think. I have to think right now, and I've heard this a little bit, Jameis has turned down quite a bit. That he you know, obviously he's got a lot of money now. He's got a lot of money coming. He does a couple of the small endorsements, but he's turned down a lot, I've been told, that he just doesn't want to get involved yet.
Sure, let somebody like Rolex or somebody like American Express come and see you turn them down.
Right, which tells me it's not enough money.
That's the thing. If it's $100,000 here, whatever.
Right.
But once again, people in Seattle don't know Jameis Winston yet.
Exactly.
Wait till they know him.
Yeah, he'll become a national brand.
No doubt.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flava in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.